This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Democrats say that they're laser-focused on giving Michigan's black voters an ironclad case for casting a ballot this year. Low voter turnout in mostly black precincts was a key piece of Donald Trump's electoral victory in Michigan in 2016. Given the political momentum this year for the Black Lives Matter movement, for the devastating ripple effect that COVID is having in Michigan's black communities, and the economic crash, there is so much for the campaigns to discuss with black voters if they choose to engage. We wanted a mid-season check-in on how the campaigns are handling this. Kat Stafford reports nationally on race and ethnicity for the Associated Press, and she's been following this year's campaigns closely. Kat, welcome back to Stateside.
Thanks for having me again.
So let's talk about what you're seeing with respect to presence on the ground. I had heard that the Trump campaign opened up an office in West Detroit. Does the campaign have a strategy to reach black voters out of that office?
Yes. So this is very interesting. I had a story that published earlier this week that kind of dove deep into Michigan and what the strategy is to reach black voters across the state. And one of the curious things that came of that conversation was talking to local officials within the city of Detroit who said that they are, to be honest, they're troubled. These are Democratic local officials who are troubled to see a Trump presence to give perspective to listeners that this is right in the heart of a community on the west side of Detroit, which has been hit hard repeatedly by the Great Recession and looking forward to now COVID-19, which you know has disproportionately impacted Black Americans, including those in this state. So Trump's strategy, I talked to some of his officials, they said, look, we want to be dead center in the community. They're out door knocking, they're talking to people. And when you know that Michigan, in Detroit specifically, has been a Democratic stronghold for years, it's not surprising that this is kind of troubling for local people who are saying, why are they here? And are they actually connecting with black voters in the city?
Did you feel like you got an answer to that question? What voters make of this when someone from the Trump campaign knocks at their door?
Yeah, and you know, I think it's twofold. I think that there are, of course, black voters who are like, absolutely not. We are not voting for Donald Trump because his rhetoric has been so troubling for many black Americans. But then there are other folks who are saying, well, hey, what's the difference between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party when life for me in my neighborhood in Detroit, in Flint, in Inkster, life has not changed at all, regardless of who is leading this country. And when you think about apathetic voters like that, that's a real concern for Democrats because it hurts them more than anyone else. And so right now we are seeing people on the ground who are trying to engage with these potential voters to tell them what's at stake for this election. But again, when you have folks that have been struggling for so long, regardless of who's leading the nation, it's quite hard to connect with them.
Yeah. Joe Biden's campaign has been doing mostly virtual events and phone banks and text messaging. But this week, Kamala Harris, Biden's running mate, was in Detroit, and he himself made a brief stop last week. I know that you went to some of Senator Harris's events. Can you tell us about how they were structured?
Yes. So these were very clearly a lot of thought process went into it. And it was very strategic for her to visit a city like Flint that, again, we know very intimately well how Flint has gone through such change after the water crisis. And a lot of people are still dealing with the effects of that. Right. So we saw her make several stops in Flint, talking to local leaders, talking to business people, talking to residents. And there was a lot of excitement to finally see someone directly from the Biden campaign on the ground there. And after Flint, she transitioned to Detroit, where she had a small meetup with black men at a barbershop on 7 Mile in Detroit. Again, something that you don't typically see. So she was able to connect, I think, with a lot of the people who have been saying, we want to see more. But again, there are still some folks who say they want to see Biden and Harris talk more specifically about what they would do to address some of these longstanding issues that have impacted cities like Detroit and Flint for so long. But to her credit, Kamala Harris was talking a lot about what's at stake again. She was talking about the need for people to keep all eyes and ears open, to keep an eye out for voter misinformation and voter suppression tactics. And she talked a lot about what she believes are President Trump's failures to handle COVID-19 and his response response to cities like Detroit. So it was a really robust visit, I think, and I believe that the campaign hopes that they were able to really connect with some of these apathetic voters.
Yeah. You know, my experience of campaign events is they tend to be a little pre-baked, shall we say, under the best of circumstances. How would you describe the energy with Kamala Harris's visit?
Well, that's the thing. You know, when you're talking about campaigning in a pandemic, the Democratic strategy has been to have, again, these socially distanced, very confined, small groupings. And what's missing is, you know, these large events where we would typically see people filling up the TCF Center in downtown Detroit or some huge event. That's not happening.
Right.
And so, you know, they've been forced to have these smaller events. But I will say that the last event, which was at the 14th Congressional District, again, on the city's west side, they were handing out signs. There was a lot of energy. People were pulling up there trying to get these campaign signs. You saw some of her sorority sisters out there. So there was a lot of excitement at that one. But again, when we think about, will that translate to people actually heading to the polls in November? Is this enough? That's the question that remains to be answered.
Kat, you've been around for a lot of elections in Michigan. Do you think the lack of ground game is going to hurt the candidates in November?
Oh, in a city like Detroit, ground game is king. We're talking about populations, not just in Detroit, to back up, you know, these cities that I've also mentioned before, you know, Inkster, Flint, and others. These are communities that have a digital divide. And when you think about that, how are you reaching folks who are not able to tap into these virtual events? That's a real weakness, I think, that the party is still struggling to figure out. Nothing can fully replicate that door-to-door knocking strategy.
Yeah. In 2016, there was this noticeable drop in turnout for Black voters in Wayne County compared with 2012. Around 37,000 fewer voters cast the ballot. And again, Donald Trump won Michigan by less than a third that many votes. Do you think, is it too soon to say, to talk about what we're seeing in polling numbers, given that both campaigns have said that they wanted to make Michigan a focus?
You know, I've seen a lot of stories that have talked about, you know, Biden's leading in the polls. He has so much support in Michigan. But then I've also seen some polls indicating that the race is a lot closer. And I just want to caution folks, back to 2016, we were in the same spot. It feels like deja vu in a sense where we have these polls saying Hillary Clinton was leading, but we know what that outcome was, right? So I've heard a lot of people saying they're throwing the polls out the window. They are focused on speaking to people directly because they know that they cannot afford to take Black voters for granted again. And Black voters have made it very clear across the nation and in Michigan that they expect far more from the Democratic Party than what they've received thus far.
Kat Stafford is a national correspondent for the Associated Press based in Detroit. Kat, it's great to hear your voice. You take care this weekend.
You too, April. Thanks.
We wanted you to meet one of the people who's doing the shoe leather work of outreach right now. Brandon Snyder is the executive director of Detroit Action, a grassroots political group organizing for the interests of Black and brown working class communities in Metro Detroit. And he and the folks he works with have been out pounding the pavements. Brandon, welcome back to Stateside.
Great. Thank you for having me here.
Brandon, people are juggling so very much right now. Maybe they're working. Maybe they're not. Maybe there are kids at home who need help with school. Maybe, maybe their families have been going through big transitions. What do you even say to people when you approach them trying to get them to think about elections this year?
Yeah, so I think one of the best ways that we do this is sort of in the premise of why we do our work. So, you know, we're a grassroots member-led community organization that is really trying to build power for people here in the community. So, you know, I think people, you know, articulate that or translate it as elections and politics, you know, sort of capital P politics. But for us, it's really about lowercase p politics, you know, building relationships with people, building community. What that looks like in our work is really trying to meet people where they are and engage with people on the things that they care about in the community. So Our work is 365 around housing, jobs, criminal justice, public education, and democracy. So, you know, when we come to people's doors, or in this case, we're on the phones with them, we're having conversations about those issues. You know, we aren't starting it with a Joe Biden or or Gary Peters. It's about, you know, how are you doing and what's the type of community that you want to see? And then we're able to better make the connection between lived experiences, shared values, and the values that people believe they should have for their community, and electoral or policy action.
Once you do get that conversation down the road, do you find that you're meeting a lot of folks who say that, yes, they do intend to vote this year?
You know, it is a bit split. You know, we talk to the people who are most likely to not vote, people who are infrequent voters. And we believe that, you know, with the conversation about like who they are and what they want to see for their communities, and then, you know, the person on the other end being able to share their lived experiences as well, we find that we're more likely than not able to move people to action and move people to vote. But, you know, there are people who are frustrated and people who are sad and disappointed this year. I think that when we talk about the pandemic and we talk about joblessness here in Michigan, or we talk about the fact that people are, you know, at risk of being foreclosed or evicted, and then the sheer amount of death that we experience, you know, people are frustrated and disappointed in the system at large, and people are, you know, have distrust in institutions. And in here in the state, you don't have to go that far back to even look at, you know, emergency management and, you know, the school takeovers to understand, you know, why people would have distrust in systems. So it's mixed. But I think that one thing that's clear, and one thing that we have noticed in conversations, is that for people who are voting, people are more determined to vote because they want to, you know, defeat Donald Trump, or they want to make sure that there's someone in this U.S. Senate who is going to, you know, pass the HEROES Act to, you know, extend unemployment benefits. And so those are the things that, you know, again, that we're leading with, and those are the things that people care about here in the city.
Black voters in the past have been a substantial part of the Democratic Party's coalitions, but there are certainly plenty of Black voters who've said that they feel their support has been taken for granted.
Yeah.
Do you think that there are things campaigns could do at this point, with just over a month till Election Day, to reach some of the same voters that you've been talking to?
So under the premise, like in this month, you know, I think that, you know, one thing is, you know, really meeting people where they are, you know, and it's understanding that the battle right now, when you look on TV, when you look at messaging, when you watch either the DNC convention or you watch the RNC convention, the battle right now in terms of narrative overwhelmingly sounds like it's, you know, the battle for white suburban women. You know, these are the people who consultants are making the argument that these were the folks who powered the Democrats to victory in a number of places. Yet we know that Black women vote, you know, 80 to 90% Democratic in all elections. And we know that right now, just in terms of ad buys and in terms of spending, we know that the Trump campaign is spending money to target Black men. So, I mean, I think that if, you know, in this month, you know, if you're a Democratic consultant, if you're a Democratic candidate, you know, what you should be doing is, you know, really trying to reach working class Black voters and realizing that the true swing voters aren't just those folks who are in Oakland County and Macomb County. It's the people who swing between voting and not voting.
Mm-hmm.
People who, you know, that sat out in 2016 here in Wayne County, and, you know, some 45, 50,000 people who were the difference between the 2012 votes for Barack Obama versus Mitt Romney and the 2016 votes in Wayne County between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. You know, those are the people who we should be trying to work harder to target. And those are the people that Detroit Action does. And so, I just think that if people really want to get the most bang for their buck, especially in this sort of shortened period, you have to meet people where they are. And you also have to realize that when it comes to Black folks, you know, you have to meet them at the depth of their experiences. And that means, you know, being able to talk to people about, you know, economic justice and what you'll be able to do for, you know, our communities if elected.
This has been an epic year for organizing for Black Lives Matter, as protests have just filled the streets. And they've very often been led by younger Black folks. Have you seen much of a difference between enthusiasm, between younger people who may have become very politically motivated this year and some older voters that you've spoken with?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, when you think about older voters, you know, there is a sense of pragmatism, and there is a sense of understanding that we're trying to use the system to get what we want. And, you know, for younger voters, people who are literally just being politically activated in this moment, or even people like myself, I'm 33, I'll be 34 in a bit. And in my lifetime, I've seen, and here in the state, I've seen the affirmative action ballot initiative in 2006. I've seen President Barack Obama be elected, and we've seen the murders of Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, and George Floyd, amongst others. And so, you know, I think for people who are being activated in this moment, you know, there is this heightened determination around the fact that, you know, why should we wait when the current political system and the current status quo hasn't given us anything that is, you know, desirable. And so, you know, for our members, you know, our youth crew of Voices of Detroit youth, you know, they're fired up, but they also are, you know, again, distrust this system, and they distrust elected officials, and, you know, they have a distrust of the Democratic Party because they haven't seen, you know, the fruits come to bear for, you know, ever. And so for younger people, what it's going to take is really trying to differentiate themselves from what's been done in the past. You know, it's not going to be just return to a era of pre-Trump. You know, you actually have to articulate like what will be different in the lives of young Black and Brown folks who've, you know, grown up during this Black Lives Matter moment, who've grown up during the Trump presidency.
Brendan, is there anything that has been said to you over the past couple of weeks or months, you know, coming from voters, that has really surprised you, or anything you didn't expect to find folks saying that they are reflecting right now?
I think like one of the things that, you know, is surprising or is interesting, you know, and it maybe it's not surprising to us that cover this or that watch this, but like people are, you know, sort of worn out and exhausted about, you know, by the sheer amount of advertisements and even the sheer amount of like fake news that people are getting that's targeting them. And I think that for a number of folks, they didn't expect that this year would bring that. Mm-hmm. So that's one. I think the one other thing that really has been, you know, surprising from my perspective has just been the fact that, going back to what I said previously, is that, you know, young people are the base that we have that's going to power us to victory, you know, if they're activated correctly. You know, our youth crew has been the ones who have been the most engaged. They've been the most creative. They've been the ones who have been the most disciplined in terms of philosophy and in terms of platform. And they're the ones who are, you know, pushing for even us as a Black-led leftist group, if you will, to be more intersectional with how we express and articulate the world that we want to see. I'm extremely resolute in just the belief that, you know, if we activate and engage and invest in young voters, and particularly young people of color, then, you know, the sky's the limit.
Brendan Snyder is the executive director of Detroit Action, which has been organizing in Metro Detroit. Brendan, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you all so much for having me.